I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. Welcome back. Every week, I curate a conversation so that you can learn more about what's happening in your backyard, what's happening within business, the economy, public policy, and of course, generally the community. If you love and you support this show, make sure you get in touch with me and let's discuss some ways that you can become a donor, or maybe you want to become a sponsor of the Locked In Show. I enjoy producing this free content, but free content is not free, and certainly would love to have you support what we're doing here. Today, I'm having a conversation with Dr. Tim Bertram, who is actually the new chief ecosystem officer at the Winston-Salem Institute for Regenerative Medicine. He was also the founder and CEO of ProKidney, and he is someone that is trying to lead the future of life sciences, not only here in the state of North Carolina, but of course here in Winston-Salem. Dr. Bertram, thank you for locking in with me. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Algernon. Pleasure to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you've got some big titles, so let's start there. Did I get them correct?
Yes. And by the way, it's Tim Works, and let's not worry about titles. Let's just get things done.
Awesome. I love it already. I love the conversation. That's what being locked in is all about, is just getting things done, locking in and focusing on what you have in front of you. You know, Tim, let's start here because, you know, I don't have too many conversations with people from the life science community. Your colleague, Karen Barnes, and I go way back to Venture 360. So we've been friends for a long time. And I recently had an opportunity to meet her for coffee, and she was just so excited. She's always excited. Doesn't matter what she's talking about, but she was just thrilled and excited about the new role that she has with Wake Forest Institute for Regenerative Medicine. And she talked very highly of you as well. And so I wanted to have this conversation because I think so many people in my audience and across Winston-Salem might be unaware of the work you all are doing. I think they certainly are unaware of the position that Winston-Salem has in the country related to some of this innovation. And, you know, full disclosure, because my audience knows this, I've been, you know, somewhat critical of Winston-Salem lately, you know, as it relates to our economy and some of the things that we're doing. So I'm excited to bring this conversation to my audience. I'm also excited to learn from you, Tim, as well. But let's start with ProKidney. Let's give a little historical context. Talk a little bit about ProKidney and sort of how you got to the place that you're currently in.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a journey. So first of all, you started this with talking about Karen Barnes. So I just wanted to get on record. I agree with your characterization of her, and we actually call her Maverick, Mav for short, because she doesn't slow down. So we're very excited to have Mav as part of our team as well. Yeah, I started ProKidney actually in 2019, but it sprang out of some original work that I had done as early as 2004. And it was basically working very closely at the time in 2004 with a company that Dr. Atala was associated with and had founded, and that was Tengion. That company ended up not being able to sustain its growth for a whole number of reasons. Out of it, what I did is I continued to build on the research that we had started looking at chronic kidney disease. As a result of that, what we were able to do was develop the first ever cell therapy that was taken from a patient that had chronic kidney disease, identify the cells that were responsible for the healing of the kidney in a person that has normal kidneys, and then put them back into the patient. And that would lead to a delay in the need for dialysis. And more specifically, it would actually extend the person's kidney function for up to years. That project was really started many years ago, took me actually outside of the U.S. and then brought me back to the U.S. into the Winston-Salem area. as the as ProKidney. So that's kind of the story of ProKidney. I left ProKidney about a year and a half ago after we got the European Medicines Agency and the Food and Drug Agency to accept the registrational program, which meant we had a specific path to commercialization. And truth be told, Elginon, I'm an R&D guy. I make medicine. I don't sell it. And so we needed somebody that could sell. I turned it over to a salesman, and I was the CEO, and I went to look at other things. What came about was Dr. Tal and I had done things together previously, and he approached me and a number of others about the possibility of leading a very exciting opportunity that was coming forward as a result of work he had done previously in another down another path, in which the National Science Foundation was picking Wake Forest Institute of Regenerative Medicine and its partners, Winston-Salem State, Forsyth Tech, and North Carolina A&T, to form what was called an engine. And these engines, and there were 10 of them across the country. One of them, another one is in the United, in North Carolina, here in the U.S., is a textile engine just down the road. But we were selected to do regenerative medicine. It's the only healthcare-related engine that NSF funded, and it also created an opportunity where they needed someone who understood regenerative medicine, and who had built companies, who had led companies, and was familiar with how to raise capital and how to work the process from basically bench to patient. That's the that's a 20-year story reduced down into as few minutes as I can at the moment.
No, we've got more time, so we're going to dive a little deeper. You said a couple things I want to come back and try to unpack.
Sure.
One, I want to hit on Dr. Atala. I don't want to spend a lot of time there because I know in your world, everyone knows who Dr. Atala is, but outside of your world, a lot of people don't know who Dr. Atala is. They're not completely aware of some of the innovation and research and development that he's leading here at the Institute for Regenerative Medicine. Just real quickly, hit on some of the work that Dr. Atala is doing for someone that has never even heard the name.
Yeah, sure. Well, Dr. Tal is actually quite impressive. He came down almost 20 plus years ago to Winston-Salem from the Boston area. What's interesting about his history is he was the first to make an engineered organ that was implanted into human beings, and they still walk around on the face of this earth with those implanted, regenerated organs. So Dr. Tala really led the scientific discipline of regenerative medicine. And for those that regenerative medicine maybe sounds like a complex word, you can think of it as you're hearing things about cell therapies coming forward, you're hearing things about gene therapies coming forward, and you're hearing things about tissue engineered or manufactured organs, tissues coming forward to treat chronic diseases. Dr. Tala was really at the foundation of that, and he brought that here and then has spent the past two plus decades expanding and building the Wake Forest Institute of Regenerative Medicine, which currently has over 600 scientists working on different areas of regenerative medicine. Very exciting, very exciting.
Wow. And all that's happening right here in Winston-Salem. And I think that's the news. That's the information we want to get out to the public is that, despite even some of the criticisms from people such as myself, there may be some really big things that are happening in the community that we're just unaware of. I know you talked a little bit about Winston-Salem being one of 10 cities across the country that's participating in this grant opportunity that you're leading. From your perspective, what are some of the biggest strengths, and then maybe what are some of the weaknesses of Winston-Salem when it comes to the current life science ecosystem?
Yeah, very good question, Eljan. In fact, your criticisms can be leveraged here. And not because people haven't wanted to, but I think one of our strengths is that there was an investment, a focused investment made on regenerative medicine and Dr. Atala. The challenge that exists here is that with this, now with the technology, is that many times it takes decades to bring something from bench to bedside. And that's my story, as I just outlined for you, showed that. So that's one of the things. Are there ways to accelerate this? Then that could be is a big question. And that's what the NSF program is trying to do. Another strength that, yeah, so that's strength and weakness. I'm trying to recognize this balance. Another strength that we have, which is really quite impressive, is the history of working in manufacturing in this particular region, going all the way back to the agriculture, tobacco, to furniture, to banking, to airline. Choose your favorite. It amazes me how so many things have come out of the Winston-Salem area centered around robust banking, innovation, entrepreneurship, and yet the criticism, they've left. So why haven't we been able to retain that those industries? So if you take, and I can give you others, but if you take those two pieces, what we center or crystallize on the NSF, its role and function is to accelerate technology development. So what we're utilizing here is a phenomenal work base that maybe can be retooled, retrained, reskilled, recertified from things that they were doing to now fit into the manufacturing of these technologies, these regenerative medicine technologies. Now, one thing that's extremely important, and this is ex where it gets exciting, and this is why I came. One of the biggest challenges for why these advanced therapies, which can completely address diseases that today we cannot address. But one of the things is why it's taking so long is that they're not able to be brought forward because manufacturing isn't understood. So just for a moment, pause. Yeah, just for a moment, think about that. Manufacturing failures account for 80 to 85% of the failures that occur in this particular therapeutic area in regenerative medicine. What's also the additional 10% or so are accounted for cost of goods. Manufacturing determines costs of goods. So if we can bring together the talents of this area, if you will, the challenges, the failures, call them what you will, and turn them into successes, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, we really are at the center point here in Winston-Salem, and frankly, here in North Carolina, to be able to bring that together and unleash these very exciting technologies for people's health, for people's employment, for investors, for a whole array of people to benefit and build an economic base that really has been now got a strong foundation.
If you're just now locking into the conversation, I'm your host, Algernon Cash. You are locked in. The other voice that you hear with me today is Dr. Tim Bertram, who is the Chief Ecosystem Officer for the Wake Forest Institute for Regenerative Medicine. And we're having a conversation about the future of life sciences, not just here in North Carolina, but specifically here in Winston-Salem. Tim, I love the way you sort of your vision, I suppose, for redefining, Winston-Salem's identity. And I really like the way you sort of charted out how, what was once a manufacturing-driven economy can now sort of transition to more of a knowledge-based economy. And I really like that vision. And I think that's the kind of long-term thinking and compelling vision that we need right now in this community at a time where you've seen the mass exodus of pretty much every publicly traded company. We're down to HanesBrand, who obviously in the last several months have announced even a further downsizing. And so this sort of strong call to action that you're outlining is I think this is the kind of energy that our small business owners and our residents and so many people in the community are looking for. You also talk about sort of the timeline that it takes for these, this innovation to really mature. My background is finance, investment banking, so I'm very familiar with raising money. I mostly work on real estate projects, so it's a little bit quicker. But you're right. I mean, sometimes this process could take 10 or 20 years. We look at Targacept, right? I mean, Targacept, they worked on a lot of those technologies for an extended period, then actually got to the end and didn't really have anything. I mean, and that's sort of the risk that you take. Talk a little bit about how we actually move some of the innovation and the work that you're doing, how does it go from lab to reality? And what does that look like? Like, what can residents and small business owners, what can they really attach to in that process?
Yeah, so a couple of things. Going from lab to reality, I want to do a brief advertisement here for us because on the 14th, 15th of April, we're actually going to be focusing on that very question. We're putting together a day and a half seminar we have at 500 Fifth Street. And it will be an open invitation for people to participate and come to listen to experts on this very question, Elgin. What you're asking here is central. So let me try to give you a high-level summary of it, and we can go wherever you wish from there. So it always starts with the idea of somebody shows that the body, and this is where regenerative medicine gets so exciting, that the body heals itself using certain cells. Certain components, building blocks, if you will, of the body. They identify those and they can uniquely place that into an area of unmet medical need. So, what does that mean? I said to you earlier, regenerative medicine is actually addressing diseases that today we cannot address with our current therapeutics. Regenerative medicine has the ability to begin to target some of those, particularly chronic diseases. I mentioned to you chronic kidney disease, devastating disease. Terribly unmet, huge unmet medical need, the largest single cost in the Medicare budget, single line item in the Medicare budget. And yet, we could address it with regenerative medicine. So you identify your need. Then, what you do, though, is you make sure that you've got all of this patented Wake Forest, Winston-Salem State, A&T, and so on, the universities will patent that. And then, what will happen is a license will be sought. The license is frequently where you start talking about doing a company. And so now to your point as an investor, and I'll speak to you as an investor because having talked to many of them, I've raised over $1 billion on Wall Street for the various companies that I've raised and started. You as an investor need to see a return on that investment. You need to understand the timeline it's going to take and the probability of success. There are many other things you consider, I realize. But we're increasing the probability of success or de-risking, which is a central idea that exists within WFIRM today, showing the biology, showing the effect of this thing that has been discovered, this cell, for example, can do this in a disease state. By de-risking, you as an investor now say, oh, you already know in medicine, 95% of things fail. Well, maybe now because it's been de-risked, you can say, oh, okay, 75% of this probability of sale. If I then come and show you how to make it, which is another step in the process, and make it to meet regulatory guidelines, your risk goes down. And as you march through, what you find, you go from the discovery to the license to the company to working with regulators to define the processes so it's consistent and reproducible to the market. Now, I've skipped over a lot of the pieces there, and you as an investor know full well that it's a little more complex, but these steps then just take time. And the time by work what we're doing with the National Science Foundation is to look where we can take that big time spend, which is figuring out how to manufacture it consistently and compressing that, coupling with the de-risking and then bringing investors in. All of a sudden now what you've got is people's jobs. Investors have a place to put their money, see a return. They know their probability of success, and now you've got an economic development.
You know, Tim, you talk. Yeah, I love the conversation around how do you attract capital and the investment and that type of thing. You know, I know here in Winston-Salem, we've been pursuing these life science based companies now for maybe 20 or 25 years. I know, you know, since the exodus of some of the manufacturing jobs in the late 90s. It also seems like there's been a pattern of, you know, Winston has struggled to attract like significant venture capital, whether it be outside venture capital, because obviously, if I'm a venture capitalist and I'm located in Silicon Valley or Austin, Texas, or where Boston, Massachusetts, wherever I'm at, you know, I want the company to move to me. I'm not going to move to them. Then also, what I've seen in Winston is that there's a lot of money, a lot of wealth in Winston-Salem. But this is sort of it's, but it's sort of risk adverse wealth. This is not people that typically participate in angel funds and startup companies and that kind of thing. You know, they're calling me because they want to be in the apartment building at the corner of Main and Main. They don't necessarily want to be in one of Dr. Atala's new startups. One, how do you convince big venture capital firms to really look seriously at Winston-Salem when in the past that's been a struggle? And then a tag along to that is, how do we start to better educate local individuals that have wealth to, you know, start looking at these opportunities so that we create that kind of, you know, network of capital that we need locally?
So it's a very, very good question. I want to use myself, but then I want to make sure I answer your question fully because this is vital. First I want to use myself. I was actually fortunate when I left, or when the company Tianjin that I mentioned folded. Local investors, both in Winston as well as in Greensboro, came to my side and we raised several million dollars. We were able to advance the company, and a year later, we gave those investors nearly a 12x return. So, 12x return in 12 months. Now, how did we do that? We knew what we had was a technology that addressed an unmet medical need, that it could be manufactured. It had the ability to do something, huge change in someone's life. And when you come forward with that kind of understanding, now you can go to the investors that want to invest tens and hundreds of millions. And I think therein lies part of the problem. Locally, what I found was is I could get several million dollars because that's what was needed. But to put this all into position, to go from bench to a commercial product, the average cost is well over $2 billion. And so what they have to look for is where are the exit strategies. So I think to your question, now I'm going to move out of my specific example, which I highlighted there, and I'm going to go to the general topic which you raised, which I think is really, really powerful. How do we get local people to benefit, and how do they select that? I think that they come in several ways. One, we have to help the investors see and understand what the probabilities of success are. In making medicine, the probability of success is very low. So this de-risking point that I brought up is very important for them to understand what has been done to de-risk. The other thing that is very, very important is the amount of money needed at different stages in the life cycle. We don't have a lot of people in this area right now that have an idea of what it takes to make a company. One of the things I brought forward is a challenge that I'm facing is not the brains to make the potential projects that could become products. What's missing is the executive teams, the people that understand, the CEOs, the CFOs, the chief legal officers that you need to run a healthcare company. I think as those people come forward locally, that will drive investment. So back to your question, that how do we spread that and get people to understand it? As we develop that, then all of a sudden what we'll have is really in the biotech healthcare space, I'm sure there's something like this in real estate. What you have is you have a technology that meets all of its criteria, and you have a management team that understands how to develop it. Now all of a sudden you're looking at a very high probability of success, which every investor wants, and then it just becomes a matter of understanding where your exit strategies are. And they're relatively well defined in the biotech space, but which I'm happy to discuss. But point is I think as the community grows with this understanding, what they'll see is that here's the time, here's my exit strategy, here's how I can do it. And I think more and more people will get involved. It's a comfort level. You know that as well as I. If an investor is uncomfortable, they're looking for reasons not to invest rather
Well,
than reasons to
I can
invest.
tell my audience that you probably won't get a 12x return in the apartment building at the corner of Main and Main. You'll get a decent return, but it won't be a 12x return. If you're just now joining the conversation, my name is Algernon Cash. I'm your host, And the other voice that you hear with me today is Dr. Tim Bertram, who is the Chief Ecosystem Officer at Wake Forest Institute for Regenerative Medicine. Tim, I'm getting close to running out of time. I love this conversation. I could go another hour with you. I know that my audience is learning because I'm learning as I listen to you. We've also had a history here in Winston-Salem, especially within some of the life science sector that we've been exploring, where sometimes these companies mature, they grow up a little bit, and then they hit the exit. I sort of call it the brain drain. We also see that happening quite. You talked a lot about some of the universities and the partnerships that you guys are currently working through. And we also see that happen with our universities. These students come from all around the world to go to school here in Winston-Salem. And once they finish at Wake Forest or Winston-Salem State or Salem or School of the Arts or UNCG, I mean, even to look at it regionally, not just Winston, they all leave. They all go, other places. And so it seems like we're just sort of leaking this intellectual talent. How do we address that?
Spot on, and I really like how you said that, Algernon, because this is the thing. If we can create the companies, create the jobs, then what we don't, well, what we don't, what we do have is we have retention. We don't have the brain drain, and I think this is where we've got the culture of a manufacturing. It's in our blood. It's in our genes. We've got people that are entrepreneurs. They've started companies. Just look at what's come out of it. The brain drain, if there aren't companies available for them to go to, where they're gonna go someplace else. I had to leave this area and live around the world to develop my companies. The 20 years were all spent in North Carolina. I had to leave the US to do it, and then in another sale came back and they wanted me to continue with it. The point I'm making is I think this is a reality in the dynamic, but what we're trying to do with the engine is create the jobs that will retain those brains and really then allow us to have a footprint and grow. Because I agree with you 100%. It is always the people. And if we can't retain the people, we will not be able to build companies here. And the ideas are plentiful. The people to take them forward is what we want to have.
W Firm has been instrumental in developing or helping to develop and support the development of Innovation Quarter. I grew up here in Winston-Salem, Tim, so I really can remember what that little stretch in that area looked like when I was coming up as a kid. And there used to be a little credit union down there when R.J. Reynolds owned all the warehouses. And my grandfather retired from R.J. Reynolds, so that's where I went to get my first car loan was right down there in Innovation Quarter. It doesn't look anything like when I grew up. But here's my question, Tim. I mean, right to the east of Innovation Quarter, you have East Winston, and you have a population and a group of people that look back west and they see some of what's happening in Innovation Quarter. They see the money and the capital that's being invested within the quarter. And even though it's just a highway away, to some of those people in East Winston, it feels like it's light years away. How do we take the work that you're doing and the innovation that's coming out of the quarter, how does it become truly inclusive so that everyone in the community feels like they've got a role to play or a little bit of ownership in what's coming out of Winston-Salem?
Yeah, so this we've actually got a segment of our strategic plan we call regional engagement. The regional engagement is critical, and you're landing right on it. So how we do that, we're looking at it as broadening understanding. So I mentioned this April 14, this meeting we're having on how to start companies. That's open to everyone. We're actually going to broadcast that to the whole 16 county region that
Wow.
we have. So to your point, we're not only looking across the highway to those that live in East Winston-Salem, but we're looking at the region, 16 county region broadly, and ultimately my belief is we can actually look to the state in a very profound way. I do believe, and I come back to what we've talked about, I do believe Winston-Salem has this unique opportunity. You look at what has come out of Winston. We have to focus on how to retain what's in Winston. And this is where manufacturing and the projects we're working on become central, because that's how it'll grow across 52. It's how it'll grow along 40 to open everything up south to Charlotte and beyond. I mean, it just I really think we're in the process. How we're doing it is through marketing, inviting, encouraging, and ultimately having to build jobs so people will have places to go there.
You know, our mutual friend Karen Barnes, she taught me a phrase many years ago. She said, "Progress only moves at the speed of trust."
Yeah.
And I think for us to have community-wide progress, certainly we have to focus on raising capital, as you and I've talked about in this conversation. But we also have to work on making certain that our social capital is in place as well, that people can trust one another, that they see opportunity across the spectrum for everyone. Here's my last question before I let you go. You've been so thoughtful and great at helping us understand some of this innovation that's happening in Winston-Salem. What's the one single action that you would love for our elected officials, our business leaders, our civic leaders, just the folks in our community that are considered leaders? What's the one single action that we could do that would be supportive of the work you're doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think part of it really gets back to your previous question. I think promote it, encourage it. This business that Karen used about building trust. The exciting thing about what we're looking at is it demands people to work at the highest levels of integrity. You can't make a medicine unless you do it right consistently. That demands trust then in your workers. Trust begets trust. And my sense is this very thing, Algernon, I would thank you for inviting me because I've been at this now for only 6 months. And what I can see is there just isn't the knowledge base. What you're doing here, and why I truly am honored to be able to come and speak with you and use this forum, is to encourage people to recognize what's here. Look at the job postings. We're doing something special with our job, trying to make sure the jobs that become available are out there, trying to promote the training, all of these different things that build the very blocks, if you will, for a foundation. You need bricks and mortar to build a house or an apartment building. You're sure going to need people to understand how to build medicine. And that is, I think, you're taking the way. We're starting. Let's see how far we can take it.
Well, Tim, you always have a standing invite to lock in with me. I would certainly love to have you back for some more education. I could have went another hour, 2 hours with you in terms of some of my questions. And yes, I will certainly be one of the cheerleaders that helped to get the word out about this. You know, for my audience, obviously, we're broadcasting this on WTOB, but I will have an op-ed sharing some additional thoughts about this conversation in Carolina Journal as well as in the Winston-Salem Chronicle. So we're going to do what we can within the locked-in community to try to get the word out about the great work that Dr. Tim Bertram and everyone is Karen Barnes and everyone is doing at W Firm. So again, Dr. Bertram, thank you for locking in with me. To my audience, as always, thank you for locking in. Make sure you stay tuned to WTOB because every Sunday morning, that is where the Locked In Show broadcasts. But if you happen to miss me there, you can always lock in wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm available on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you like to go, you can lock in there. As always, until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.